Good day, I'm Warren Thompson, and today I have the privilege of interviewing Nigel Casey. He's the British High Commissioner to South Africa, just recently been appointed. Great to join you here in Pretoria, Nigel.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Now, as I understand it, we were just talking a little bit before the recording around, you've actually served in South Africa on behalf of the government, your government before, in the 90s. You've come back and you've been here for a couple of months. I'd be very interested just to start off with your kind of perspective of the country during the 90s when you first arrived and now returning on your second visit, how it's changed and how you see it differently as an outsider.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, in some obvious respects, it's a very changed country and in some almost a different country to the one I arrived in June 1993. I mean, the most obvious is that the public face of South Africa has changed completely, from everything from the guy who checks your passport on the way in through to the president. And I know people are frustrated with the pace of change, particularly in the economy, but you know, we are dealing as a government with a completely different government in South Africa, and that the South Africa that projects itself internationally is completely different now. And I think that's obviously a welcome change, and a one that makes all the difference in terms of international perceptions of South Africa. In other respects, South Africa is still the same place that I remember, and it's still the same fabulous country that I was keen to come back to.
I think, if I remember correctly, June 1993 was the probably the most precarious and vulnerable the country was ever has ever been, during the assassination of Chris Hani.
Yeah, that's right.
Chris, there must have been a bit of a baptism of fire for you at that time.
Literally. I mean, my first day in South Africa was the day that the AWB drove that armoured personnel carrier through the front window of Kempton Park.
Right.
And yes, it did feel precarious. It was not long after Chris Hani's assassination. There was a threat of a bombing campaign. And beyond that, you know, in the run-up to the 94 elections, Inkatha were boycotting until literally 3 weeks before. If you look behind you, you'll see on the wall my copy of the ballot paper with a little sticker at the bottom where they added Inkatha after the papers had been printed, when they decided finally to come in at the last minute. So yes, it did feel very precarious and very hard won. And the point for me is that when people ask now, you know, what do you think of South Africa's progress? You know, are you concerned about things? You know, I always think back to how precarious it was in 1993, and how much worse things might have turned out. And I remember that, you know, the lesson I take is that South Africans are very resilient. They've come through much bigger challenges before now and emerged stronger the other side. So I say to people, I start out as a strategic optimist when it comes to the future of this country.
Obviously, your starting position is you're the diplomatic envoy of the British government to the country, but the countries have a long history together, and one of those key ties that I wanted to talk to you about today was trade.
Yeah.
Can you give us a bit of perspective as to how trade between the two countries has grown and developed over the last few years?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, the really striking thing about the economic relationship between South Africa and the UK, well, two things really. First of it is its balance, and secondly, its mutuality. And what do I mean by that? First of all, the trade stats are literally in balance. We have about a £10 billion worth trade every year, which is pretty much £5 billion each way. But also the investment relationship has become very two-way. So, you know, it's well known that we've had a long-standing stock of investment in South Africa. The Reserve Bank figures suggest that it's about 36% of all FDI in South Africa. It's about £45 billion worth. What's changed in the last 15, 20 years is that South Africa is also deeply invested in the UK. So we think South Africans have invested about £65 billion worth in the UK, in particular buying up some of our biggest high street brands, Nando's, Benson's for Beds, New Look. I mean, these are some of our, as I say, best loved high street brands. So it's a two-way street, and we're also buying quality products from South Africa, added value products. We're buying, you know, BMW 3 Series and Ford Rangers and the best wine that you're prepared to let go from this country.
Right. So just, I think, just to frame that at the moment, the trade between the two countries, how do the tariffs and protection fare? How easy is it for, say, a British company to deliver an imported good to South Africa? And vice versa, how easy is it for South African manufacturer to land products in Britain at the moment in terms of trade, tariff, and any other export levies that might be incurred?
Well, I think it's a pretty good framework at the moment. The formal government-to-government agreement that's in place at the moment is the EU SADC Economic Partnership Agreement, which came into force last October after 7 or so years of negotiation. That covers goods trade, and it's an asymmetric agreement in that all the other Southern African countries in it, apart from South Africa, benefit from duty-free, quota-free access to, because they're all least developed countries. South Africa is not a least developed country, but it does benefit under that agreement from what are called tariff rate quotas in the jargon, i.e. Generous quotas which attract a lower tariff than would otherwise be the case if we were just working on normal WTO basis. So, you know, from my experience, exporters in both directions are operating from a pretty healthy starting position. Tariffs themselves are not the main barrier to doing business. We have a pretty compatible set of regulatory regimes, and so it's a strong starting point for a healthy two-way trade and investment relationship.
Have you had the opportunity to canvass British firms on their appetite to sustain investment in South Africa and I guess the broader SADC region, if we were to go that far?
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to quite a lot of British firms both before coming here and since. They're here for the long term. The vast majority of our investors have been here for some time already, and they take a long term view. So, you know, they've seen the business cycle going up and down. But this South Africa in itself is a significant size market, and more importantly, it's a springboard for entry into the rest of Africa. There is strong growth in other parts of Africa, notably in East Africa, This country, particularly Johannesburg, is the best business services platform anywhere in the continent for people to headquarter themselves for doing business elsewhere. So I think, yeah, I mean, whether you're talking about companies looking at South Africa specifically or Africa as a whole, this is definitely the first place people look in when they're looking for a gateway into the market.
Just from your perspective and in your experience, I mean, we're desperate to try and sustain foreign direct investment. I'm sure you're kind of familiar with the figures in terms of unemployment and the number of people on social welfare in this country. Is there anything that you think the country could do better to either market itself or remove impediments to allow companies, perhaps not just British companies, European companies, American companies, to come and invest and do business in South Africa?
Well, I mean, I think for companies looking to invest or sell, I mean, they're looking for a couple of things. They are looking for policy certainty, and that's important if you're investing, particularly in an industry like mining, for example, where you're obliged to sink in significant investment and you only get returns over a very long period. They're also looking for growth, and obviously, you know, they will go where the growth is. South Africa is going through a period of low growth at the moment, but as I said, it is still able to attract people as a springboard into other faster growing bits of the continent, and hopefully this economy will return to growth before long.
Okay. I just wanted to get some of your impressions on Brexit. You indicated that you worked with the previous Prime Minister, David Cameron, on the negotiations that led up to the call for the election on Brexit. I just wanted to try and get perspective from you around South African businessmen or South African companies, what Brexit actually means for the UK. Mm-hmm. What's it going to mean in terms of access to the common market? and also what does it mean for the country's immigration policies, where I think it's been a very kind of open border for European citizens to come and work and live in the UK. What are the sort of scenarios you could sketch out for us?
Okay. Well, the first thing to say is that the precise contours of what the eventual Brexit outcome will consist of won't be known until the negotiations are finished. But we have a an overarching vision, which government ministers have been very clear about, which is that at the end of the process, we want to have achieved two things. I mean, first of all, a very strong, deep relationship with our neighbours in Europe, with the greatest possible access to the European single market and and minimal barriers to the smooth flow of goods across borders between the UK and the rest of Europe. And the second part is that we want to be very much an outward-facing, ambitious trading nation, and I'm confident that we will be reinvesting in the years to come in our relationships with longer-standing partners beyond the EU, in particular countries like South Africa, with whom we already have an established and strong economic relationship. I think Brexit will give us that extra push that we needed to say to be more present in markets like this, both in a political and economic sense, and to, as I say, to reinvest and reinvigorate our traditional long-standing relationships.
Okay, so that means being a little bit, we're going to see a bit more of the UK being a bit more assertive with, perhaps not more assertive, but certainly more present and more engaged with,
yes,
with places like Africa and the rest?
Absolutely. I'm confident about that. And specifically when it comes to South Africa, I mean, our first task is to make sure that there is no disruption to our existing trade. And so we, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we have the existing EU-SADC Economic Partnership Agreement. The first priority is to make sure that there's no interruption in the trade that's enabled by that current agreement. So that's task number one, and we will be working with the South African government, who share our ambition to make sure that we deal with that issue promptly in the next couple of years before we leave the EU. And once we've left the EU and have control of our own trade policy, we will be ready to have a more ambitious, forward-looking discussion about new opportunities that open up in the future when we, as I say, we have the ability to set our own independent trade policy with an eye to what works best for the UK and South Africa.
Okay, so if I just were to summarise that, so I think from the objective from the British side of things would be almost to keep the economic relationship with the EU the same, but obviously by leaving the European Union, the UK is going to assert its rights to who it lets into its borders, effectively being a little bit more careful and more perhaps regulating. Better regulating the flow of people in and out of the UK as opposed to economic goods and services?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, first of all, our economic relationship with the EU is clearly not going to be exactly the same as it was before, since we're leaving the EU proper. But as I said, we will work for the closest possible economic partnership through the negotiations which have started in the last couple of weeks. I'm confident that we are going to remain an open country. We're not going to be drawing up the drawbridge to talent from all around the world. Indeed, we will want to make sure that we structure our approach to migration in a way which attracts the top talent, whether that's from South Africa or anywhere else, and enables a two-way flow of talent commensurate with the type of strong business relationship that we aim to build.
Okay, great. We'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time, Nigel, and all the best in your role.
Thank you very much.
That was Nigel Casey, the British High Commissioner to South Africa.